What's up, Beardos? You're listening to a terrifically time-traveling bonus episode of The Bearded Vegans.
Basically, our whole philosophy boils down to, don't be a jerk.
Don't answer a question first try. Not answering the question. I really hope people didn't tune in to hear us talking about beards.
Beards.
What does that mean, Paul?
The big beans and the big brown red bowl. Red bowl.
Who knows, Andy? I don't know.
Welcome to the show. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, one, that's probably kind of weird because this is our Patreon episode, but you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com, and you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com or just leave a comment below.
In today's bonus episode, we're going to talk about what we've been eating, go over the news, and then dive into an in-depth review of Free Birds, a 2013 children's film about time-traveling turkeys.
I like that unintentional alliteration at the end there. I didn't even mean to do that.
Andy, I feel like you just putting on that it's a children's film just makes it seem trivial that we spent our time to watch this and now discuss this.
Don't you know that we are children at heart and also just in everyday life?
Also, I am Andy and I spent about 30 minutes discussing a escape room that Andy had just gone to last night. And so Andy is certainly a connoisseur of escape rooms, but I like to consider myself a connoisseur of children's animated films. So I think this is in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, it's funny because we were deciding what we wanted to do, and I presented you with a few options, and they're all documentaries or Free Birds. And you said, you know, I'm a huge fan of those animated children's films. So we decided that would be fun to mix it up because I don't think we've ever done one aside from Ferdinand, right?
I believe that is the only one we've done, yes.
Yeah, so it should be an interesting discussion of this film that I had not seen and had totally forgotten about until I Googled animal rights films, and somehow this came up.
Yeah, it's interesting that this came up as an animal rights film, but I guess we'll talk about that in a little bit. Andy, first of all, I just want to say thank you to all of the wonderful beardos out there who have, if you are listening to this, it means you've subscribed to our Patreon, and we cannot appreciate that. We cannot appreciate you enough. So thank you so much for donating. It really means a lot to us, and we hope that you enjoy this great bonus discussion about a children's film.
Yeah, I hope people will enjoy this discussion. We got some other cool stuff to talk about in this episode as well. Yeah, thank you for everybody that does throw a couple bucks our way, because it really does help out the podcast and helps us keep this machine chugging along. So thank you very much for that.
So Andy, before we get going into this, have you been speaking of time traveling, you've been regular traveling around the country. Where are you at now and what are you eating?
Right now I'm in Anaheim, California, because I'm about to go to Expo West, which is the natural foods product exposition, which has, I don't even know how many companies are there. It's, even if you're there for like 4 days straight, I think it'd be close to impossible to look at every single booth that's there. It's just this massive event. And so I'm going to be there because a lot of the fun vegan companies are debuting their new products there. So I'm going to be sorting my way around that place. And I don't know if that's like the right term, sorting my way around, Paul. Sort my way downtown.
Oh, you beat me to it.
But I'll be doing my best to sift through all the fun new vegan options there. And if history is any indication, we'll probably... Hey, history ties in with our movie today, Paul. If history is any indication, we will probably do a little bonus episode to talk about all the good, fun stuff that I found there as well. So I guess stay on the lookout for that. But in my travels, Paul, I have eaten some really delicious food. And so I've been in LA, and I have this list of new places that I've been working my way through. And the top of that list was Hinterhof, which is an all-vegan German beer garden / restaurant. And I, of course, did not go for the beer, but I was curious about the food. This place was highly recommended by many folks when I reached out and was asking what are the new spots in LA that I must try. And I have to say, I looked at their menu and I looked at the photos online, and I was a little wary because it did seem like it was a lot of just huge hunks of seitan, whether in the form of sausage or Wiener Schnitzel or Wiener Schnitzel, as they might say. And but I was like, everyone's raving about this place. Everyone's raving about the Wiener Schnitzel, so I should go and try this. And so I went. That's what I got. I got that Wiener Schnitzel, and it was indeed a giant hunk of fried seitan. And I would say you can see a photo of it on our Instagram. And you look at it, you're like, this plate is 80% one big slab of fried seitan. And so that aspect of it didn't really appeal to me. But I will say they fried the hell out of that seitan and seasoned it. And the flavor and the crunchy texture, it was crunchy throughout the entire meal. I have to give them huge credit for that. And I wish that the Wiener Schnitzel was like half the size of what it was, because it was delicious. But for me, the stars of the show were the sides that came with it, which were these mashed potatoes and this cabbage. And the cabbage is, I'm not sure what's going on with it. It's almost as if it was like pickled a little bit. And I think there might have been some apple in there. It was a little sweet. Those two things were phenomenal. And I'm kind of curious to go back and see if I can, because I didn't see them listed as sides you could purchase on their own, but I just want to be like, can I get a plate that size but half cabbage and half mashed potato and put like 2 inches of Wiener Schnitzel on there? It was seriously delicious, so I really can't wait to go back. There's a couple other things on the menu that look really good. I don't know if I'll get a chance on this trip, but it was a great recommendation. And then a fun addition to this little trip to Hinterhof was I got out of the restaurant and I was craving something sweet. And I said, I wonder how far I am from Donut Friend right now. I feel like I'm in that kind of that section of it. LA is pretty sprawling and huge, but I felt like I was, you know, close enough to that it would warrant a trip. Pulled open the phone, opened up my maps, and went, oh, it is one block away from me right now.
That's awesome.
I walked over to Donut Friend, and on my one block walk to Donut Friend, I passed by a food truck that had the word vegan prominently on it, and it was a like mac and cheese place. I did not get the name, but like half the menu was vegan, and you could get like a cashew cheese based mac and cheese, and you could add vegan duck to it or vegan pepper steak and stuff. And I was like, man, if I just wasn't so full from that meal, I would probably go for this mac and cheese because I bet it's great. And then I took a couple steps down the street, and across the street, there was another food truck. There was a Mexican place that prominently was displaying, check out our vegan menu. So I guess I was in the vegan district, Paul, because it's almost impossible not to stumble upon vegan food when you're in LA. It's kind of a magical place in that regard.
That's awesome, because it's definitely, it seems like it's normalized there, which is really cool and important, I would say.
Yeah, I remember even when I was in LA, you know, 4 or 5 years ago doing outreach, I just remarked on how much more normalized it is in LA, because you just drive down the street, even back then, and you just see signs everywhere there. It's like, vegan, try our vegan menu. We have vegan this, vegan, you know, so, and it just feels like it's not some weird thing. And so a lot of people that we would talk to on those college campuses during those tours, they would go, oh, yeah, that place down the street advertises vegan stuff. And it wasn't some thing where people were like, oh, I have to go to the one restaurant in town that's really far away and inconvenient and expensive. Like, they're just all over the place. So very cool. Love that LA. And I'll leave the food at that, although there is so much more food that was visited. And people can go to our Instagram to see photos and descriptions and reviews of all of that good stuff. Paul?
Yes, Andy.
What went in that beautiful mouth of yours this past week?
So this is actually a couple weeks ago, but I feel like I had another place to talk about in our last main episode. But a couple weeks ago, I went to this place called The Pop Shop, which was in Collingswood, New Jersey. It was, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes outside of Philadelphia. And I had never been there before. And it's this nice little cute, like 1950s looking diner type thing, and the menu is a newspaper that you open up, and it has all of the like all of the menu items kind of as you're opening up this newspaper. And the menu itself is gigantic, and sprinkled throughout the menu there's definitely some veganizable things, but then there's in one section there is just a vegan section. And they had a whole bunch of different stuff. It was almost like too diverse of choices, where I was like, oh no, like I just, please help me make a decision. I ultimately went with a Philly cheesesteak. I don't know why that's what I went with, because I was not in Philadelphia, but sometimes I just like to try them and see how they are outside of Philadelphia. And the Philly cheesesteak was good. It seemed like they were maybe making their own seitan there. But the real, Andy, the star of the show was this milkshake that I got afterwards, and it was like a Oreo, I believe, milkshake, and it was just very, very good. But so that's all I really have to say about this. It was like a nice, cute little place, and I enjoyed the decor and the theme of it. They had a lot of, I think they did trivia nights there some nights. So I don't know, it just seemed like a pretty cool place. If it was closer, I feel like it would be a place I could see myself stopping in and just, you know, getting a milkshake or something like that, or some ice cream. I think you could also get a banana split, which I was very tempted to get because I probably haven't had one of those since I was 7, but I did not get that.
You know, I feel like the banana split falls into the category of dessert, like a root beer float, where it's better in theory. takes a great photo, but when you go to eat it, you're like, why do I just have raw banana with my ice cream right now? What's going on here?
I disagree, Andy. I think, well, ooh, I actually haven't had a banana split in a while, so maybe I would reassess my evaluation of banana split.
So you're
split.
Not speaking from a place of authority then?
No, but I can genuinely say I do like root beer floats.
Yeah, well, you also like champs, so.
Oh, harsh. Well, there goes our Patreon, our champs donation to Patreon.
I don't know. I feel like here's the way a place can turn around the banana split for me is if they flambe that banana. Like they put some sugar on it and then like put a blowtorch to it and kind of like caramelize the banana a little bit into
that. I like bananas, Andy. Well, also, I'll
just
say
eat a dang banana.
I went to Champs a couple weekends ago, and I got the breakfast sandwich for the first time because I'm usually going for something more hearty and more extravagant. It was one of the best breakfast sandwiches I've ever had in my life. So take that, Andy.
Was it the SAG sandwich?
I believe it was, yes.
It's a pretty solid sandwich.
Deserves more credit than that.
It's definitely one of the better item menus. It's definitely one of the better menu items for sure.
Definitely.
It's not as good as their kale Caesar though.
That is great. The mac and cheese, I think. Anyways, this is not going to turn into a Champs, me talking about how much I love Champs and you talking about how much you dislike Champs. So shall we move on into the news, Andy? We'll save that for another bonus episode, the great Champs debate.
Imagine if that's it. We devote an hour to debating the pros and cons of Champs Diner. I don't hate Champs. They do, speaking of milkshakes, they do have great milkshakes.
They do. They have phenomenal milkshakes.
Yes.
All right, Andy. Let's move on into the news.
Okay, Paul. One piece of news to talk about today. This is something I'm really curious to get your opinion on this particular campaign. So we're first going to talk about it from this article over at plantbasednews.com, which came out on February 27th. 40 MEPs pledged their support to $1 million vegan campaign. And you might be asking, if you're from the United States, what the heck is an MEP? And that is a member of European Parliament. So
yeah,
reading from
me.
This article. God. 40 members of European Parliament have declared their support for the $1 million vegan campaign, including UK MEPs Catherine Bearder and John Flack. I'm assuming those must be people that are high profile in the UK because they mean nothing to me. As part of the campaign, Pope Francis has been offered a $1 million donation to a charity of his choice if he follows a vegan diet during Lent. The $1 million vegan campaign wants to highlight the devastating impact of animal agriculture, including deforestation and biodiversity loss, as well as the suffering it causes to billions of farmed animals. Campaign supporters include musician Moby, actor Mina Suvari, and scientist Joseph Poor of Oxford University. It has the backing of environmentalists George Monbiot and Chris Packham. Paul McCartney, a longtime vegetarian and co-founder of the Meat Free Monday campaign, also supports $1 million Vegan. Supporters now include these politicians from 17 countries across the EU and from 7 of the 8 European parliamentary groups who have signed a statement expressing concern over the climate crisis and their support for the campaign. And you can go to milliondollarvegan.com to learn more about it. I was poking around there. Also saw among their supporters, something that ties into today's review, is Woody Harrelson. And then also Joaquin Phoenix, Ivana Lynch, and Ollie Sykes from Bring Me the Horizon. And then a number of organizations have signed on as well. I'd say most notably probably Farm Sanctuary, Mercy for Animals, PCRM, Pro Veg, Sea Shepherd, and the Save Movement are all down with this campaign. And so this campaign, I've seen it posted around a lot, and it's being presented as being sort of spearheaded by Genesis Butler, who is a 12-year-old vegan activist, someone I've met before, delightful person. And digging in deeper, it actually seems like it's not Genesis's project, and maybe Genesis is sort of this spokesperson, but it's the person behind Veganuary who is the one that is actually the person that has put this together. And Genesis is almost absent from the website. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Paul, before we go any further, how do you feel about this campaign? They're trying to raise $1 million. If the Pope agrees to eat plant-based for all of Lent, which is 40 days long, they will let the Pope decide where these $1 million will get donated to.
First of all, Andy, I just wanted to say, when you were reading out this list of names of people who are donating to this, how stoked would you be if you were that scientist or the environmentalist whose names just follow, like, oh, Moby, Paul McCartney, and then this, like, scientist? Like, I'm sure that person is a great person, a wonderful person, has probably never been listed alongside of, like, Paul McCartney before. Anyways, that was just a complete side note. But, Andy, I think it's... Before talking about whether or not this is, I guess, a good thing, I feel like if I was Pope Francis, this would be such a, like, an easy, maybe $1 million isn't a big deal to him because it is, like, the Catholic Church, who I'm sure has a truly tremendous amount of money. But if I were the Pope, I feel like this would be a no-brainer to do. It's like, it's this thing that maybe he doesn't know anything about veganism, so maybe he's like, I don't even know how I would do it. But I'm sure they could just hire someone to be like, here, this is your personal vegan chef for 40 days who is going to cook you the best meals that you've probably ever had in your life. And now you get $1 million to donate to any charity. I feel like it seems like it should happen. Now, for some reason, I feel like it's not going to happen, but I don't know. And then I guess in terms of whether or not I think it's a good thing, I guess getting, like, this is, maybe this is the epitome of getting the vegan celebrity thing. Like, oh, we just need this important person to be vegan and then everything will be good. Maybe this is like the pinnacle of that. And it's like, people think that if they can get the Pope to be vegan, then it would make, I don't know, every Catholic person in the world think about going vegan or something. So I don't know, Andy. I'm also curious as to why the members of the European Parliament, who I'm sure out of the 40 of them, probably very few of them are vegan or vegetarian. Maybe they were asked to do it from the environmental standpoint, and that's why they're signing on to it. But I don't know. That's my initial thoughts.
Yeah, I would have to assume that all of those people are doing it, or the politicians are doing it over climate, and the... You know, there's that line that said, the 8 European parliamentary groups who have signed a statement expressing concern over the climate crisis. So it doesn't really seem like it's necessarily from an animal rights sort of angle. So, yeah. So I guess the reasoning would be the Pope is a highly influential figure. And if you can get the Pope to do this and then publicize the crap out of it, that will open up a lot of Catholics to going vegan. It's like you said, it's the celebrity factor of sort of influencing people to do it. If this goes through, do you think it's likely that a lot of people would sort of follow the footsteps of the Pope if they heard about this campaign? They're like, oh, the Pope's going to do this and get $1 million to donate, and that's pretty cool. And do you think the following mindset, and this is, of course, we can only speculate on this, do you think that then that will follow through to be like, I guess I should go vegan for Lent, or I should eat plant-based for Lent? Or do you think most people would sort of ignore that?
Well, do you think maybe the because it says as part of the campaign, Pope Francis has been offered $1 million. And do you think maybe another part of the campaign is like after the Pope goes vegan, then they'll do this. They'll set up this thing where it's like, if you go vegan for 40 days, we'll donate $20 to a charity of your choice or something like that, which is, you know, it's kind of like a longer term pay to watch camp, like advocacy type thing. It's like you get more money, or you get more money donated, but you have to be vegan longer. Now, obviously, there's no way that anyone would be able to check to make sure someone is actually vegan for 40 days. But I feel like if that's their move, I could see that encouraging a lot of people to go to try being vegan. And, you know, I don't, even though I guess we can talk about how is this promoting like, oh, you can go vegan and then stop being vegan after 40 days. Yes, it is kind of saying that that's okay. But at the same time, I think you're going to get a lot of people, you might get a lot of people trying veganism that in no way would have ever tried it before. And even if a small percentage of those stick, that's people who probably wouldn't have otherwise. So I guess that would be good.
Well, I feel like you're reading too much into the as part of the campaign aspect of that sentence, because from looking around the website, it seems like basically the campaign is to get the Pope to go vegan, or at least plant-based for Lent. And then the website does, the website is really pushing heavily try vegan for Lent. Also, I totally misspoke because there's Genesis Butler real big right on the front page. So there she is. But that it basically, you go and it's like, go vegan to protect the environment, for world hunger, for health, for animals, for faith, to show benevolence to all living beings. And then it goes down to this next tab, which says try vegan for Lent. And that just, you know, talks about where do you get, there's a tab for where you can get your protein, where you get your cooking skills, you know, all of those things. So it seems like it basically the campaign is get the Pope to go vegan, and then people will read about the campaign once it's announced the Pope is going to go vegan or eat a plant-based diet, and then people will go to this website and then try it as well. So it feels like that's the whole thing. It's hard to imagine that they would start handing out $20 bills to people that agree to go vegan for Lent, but that could be an interesting addendum to the campaign in the future. But I don't know. I hate to poo-poo this, Paul. But it's just one of those things where it kind of feels like, I guess I'm trying to look at the other side of the coin, because I do agree. I mean, I think it's entirely possible that some people would look to the Pope for inspiration, be like, oh, the Pope thinks this is worth doing, then I should do it. And then I'm trying to think of the downsides. The downside, of course, as you already pointed out, is that, I mean, do you think that this would fall under a reducitarian approach? Is this kind of just like a grand scale Meatless Monday? Like, just have to go vegan for one day a week, or you just have to go vegan for 40 days a year, or something like that? Do you feel like it would fall under that sort of roof, or do you think it could be given a different label?
I think it would be given a different label, because I think there's a big difference between Meatless Mondays, where your lifestyle is still for the most part centered around animal-based products, versus 40 days completely vegan, where it's like you have to change your lifestyle. And I know we've talked about this stuff before, where actually, you know, it must have been when we were talking about Veganuary and why I like that so much, is because it forces you to, you know, get rid of many of the things in your refrigerator that are animal based. Now, obviously, you still have a pantry, and a lot of that stuff can stay there it's probably not going to expire in that time. But I don't know. I still think it forces you to go grocery shopping specifically for this stuff. It forces you to like prepare lunches and prepare dinners. And whereas Meatless Monday, it's like you can get away with like, oh, I forgot I was doing Meatless Mondays. Well, let me look at what I have in my fridge, and oh, I can pull it off today. That's cool. Like, this is more of a lifestyle shift. So I do think it's different in a very positive way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair assessment. It, you know, it falls under the like, not, you know, 30-day vegan challenge kind of model, which I think, I'd assume if people are going to this website and they're signing up, they can get a vegan starter kit. And I assume that when they do that, it gets like emailed to them, and then they sort of will continue to get emails that do push people to go further. And that it's not just saying, oh, all you have to do is go vegan for 40 days and then you're done. That's all you have to do. That is an assumption on my part. But I would imagine, since it's the same person that's behind Veganuary, that there will be like an email campaign that follows it up, because that's what Veganuary does. We still get those Veganuary emails from them from when we signed up for it. So, okay. So other potential downside is the Catholic Church has widespread allegations of abuse, and it's not something that the Pope has spoken out against, or even when spoken about it, said anything favorable. Like, I know we want to consider this Pope to be like the cool progressive pope, but there's still a lot of regressive stances that this pope takes. So I also worry that the message that this campaign sends to the larger, the world as a whole, is basically that vegans don't care about that particular issue, and that they're sort of casting that aside in favor of getting the animals, you know, first and foremost. And I don't know. I feel like that could be a legitimate concern.
Yes. No, I do agree with that. I don't know. Do you think this falls under this category of, like, when we talk about, you know, Fox News or people that we have disagreements with, it's like, well, yeah, I guess I'd rather have that person be vegan than not vegan. But then again, we are not giving $1 million to Fox News when what's his face was on Fox News, Gene Bauer. So this is definitely different because, again, $1 million is no small amount of money. But again, to the Catholic Church, that might be peanuts, but I'm sure they are worth, you know, billions of dollars. So I don't know. I agree with you though, Andy, that I think that is a very legitimate criticism of the campaign.
The banker's best guesses about the Vatican's wealth put it at $10 billion to $15
billion. Mm-hmm. Knew it.
Yeah.
Told you.
So they, yeah, so a million is a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of that. But, like, I agree with you that it would be, like, a no-brainer for the Pope to be like, sure. Like, the Pope could even just lie. We'd be like, yeah, I'm going to do that. Give me $1 million, you know.
And not very popely. Like,
This is true. But yeah, you know, I mean, yes, not very popely, but yeah, I think that it is something that is worth considering, because I agree, you're like, oh, it's better that the Pope would go plant-based for Lent than not. But is it something that we as a community or a movement or even just a certain sect of activists should be pushing for? Especially to the point where it means giving up $1 million. Like, $1 million might not be that much to the 10 to 15 billion that the Catholic Church is worth, or the Vatican is worth, but it certainly could go a really, really, really long way for helping a number of, like, grassroots vegan education organizations.
Yeah, but I think the reason that this is able to get, I don't know how close they are, but it seems to me that this is able to achieve that much money is because it's such a high profile thing, you know? Like, I think I agree with you. It's like, maybe we should be putting this $1 million towards something else. But I think if you were making up a fundraiser for that something else, it probably would not be able to make $1 million. And for all we know, and I'm in fact sure that some of these people on this list, like Moby or like Farm Sanctuary, Mercy for Animals, all those organizations and those people, Woody Harrelson, Joaquin Phoenix, I have no doubt they are donating to other things as well. And maybe they're donating. We don't know how much they're donating to this. We don't know how much they're donating to the other things. So I feel like it's maybe not a constructive discussion to be like, this should be going towards something else, because there are other things, and many of these people, I'm sure, are donating to those other things as well.
Yeah, and I generally try not to get too caught up in someone should do this instead of that kind of activism, because just purely because there are so many people that do absolutely nothing at all, you know. So it's, mm-hmm. it's unfair to criticize the, I mean, obviously we are allowed to, and we should critique all tactics and campaigns and stuff like that. But I generally agree with you that it's not the most helpful thing to be like, well, they should have spent their money on this, like my preferred thing instead. But it still just feels like such a huge amount of money to try and throw at someone where you don't even know where they're going to donate this money. Like, where's the Pope going to donate this money to? What if it is something that is, you know, like anti-LGBT or something, you know, like what could it be? And yeah. it feels like that aspect of it is so open-ended. And I don't know, like, it also, do you feel like it just feels like bribery? Like, is it just, you know, and like, and that people would, you know, other Catholics would look at that and go like, yeah, I totally understand that. Like, I would do something for $1 million to help, you know, to help others. And like, they'd be like, I get why he's doing that, but he doesn't really believe in going vegan. He's just trying to get that money. You know, he's trying to get that bread, Paul. So it's like, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of things that make me feel a little uneasy about the campaign.
Yes. No, I do think that there would be some people that would look at that and be like, oh, yeah, this was a no-brainer. Why the Pope's doing this? I don't need to go. Like, he doesn't care about going vegan, so I don't need to go vegan. But again, it's like, I imagine there would be some people who would think about veganism or try veganism because of this.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I feel like if someone came up to me and was like, if you lick the door handle of that like public bathroom, I'll give you $1 million. I would fucking lick that door handle, Paul, you know, but it doesn't mean that I believe in licking the door handles or think that it's a good or like a healthy thing to do, you know, and I feel like that people might look at it like that.
You heard it here first. Andy Tabar believes veganism is like licking a gas station door handle, bathroom door handle.
I didn't say a gas station bathroom. That's pushing it too far. Like a nice rest stop door handle. Okay.
Yes, all those nice rest stops. The Vince Lombardi door handle.
Okay, like obviously veganism is not the same as licking a door handle, but I think you get my point, Paul, that there's like a lot of things people would put themselves through for money, and a lot of people would stand back and be like, oh, I can't believe you're doing that for money. I get it, but also clearly that's not something that you believe in or would suggest other people do if they're not going to get that money, you know? Feels like... Does that make more sense?
Yeah. Like, in fact, now that you say it again, I hope that it would not be perceived as this type of thing that's like, because when you said the licking the door handle thing, it sounded so outrageous because like that's obviously such a disgusting and negative thing. But I think, you know, many non-vegans probably do see veganism as this gross thing that your friend dares you to do or bets you money to do. And is this a dare for $1 million to go vegan for a month, in which case, if that's how it's perceived, other people aren't going to do it if they're not also getting money.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people don't realize that plant-based food can be so delicious and amazing and fulfilling and filling and nurturing and all of those good things, so it might be seen in that light. Like, yeah. Oh, we'll give you $1 million if you just eat raw tofu and uncooked spinach for a month or something, you know? And if you're like, wow, you'll really put yourself through that for $1 million? It's like, you know. So, I don't know. I'm just trying to think of, like, the downsides of this thing. It doesn't mean that I'm like, this shouldn't happen at all, but I just feel like we should be a little more critical of where we're giving money to and which people we're trying to influence to go vegan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So... I don't know. Paul, guess what the follow-up to this is?
What is the follow-up, Andy?
Follow-up in the same episode. This is coming to us from ChristianToday.com on March 7th, so yesterday at the time of recording. Pope replies to Million Dollar Challenge to go vegan for Lent.
Drum roll.
In what could be interpreted as a polite no, Pope Francis replied in a letter to Genesis Butler, the 12-year-old vegan campaigner who issued the challenge, to say that he cared about the issues and that she was in his prayers. Thoughts and prayers. He declined to say one way or another whether he had actually accepted the challenge. Quote, His Holiness Pope Francis has received your letter and he has asked me to thank you, said the response, which was signed by senior priest and assessor for general affairs, Paolo Borgia. He appreciates the concerns about care for the world, our common home, which prompted you to write to him. The Holy Father will remember you in his prayers and he sends you his blessing.
Do you think the Pope actually saw the thing?
I don't know. I mean, it feels pretty dismissive.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
So, and then I guess the follow-up to that is that Genesis replied and was like, thank you. It's an honor to be in your prayers. Can I meet you for lunch? Like, can we sit down and have a lunch together to discuss these issues? So, you know, so I guess we'll see what happens. We'll see where
that'll
that goes.
That'll be cool.
Yeah.
Andy, we just had a whole mini episode.
We sure did. All right, Paul, should we move on to this movie review?
Let's move on. Yeah, 40 minutes deep into the episode.
Well, you know, as I was watching this film, I was like, I don't know if I have a whole lot to say about this film. And I'm sure, like, literally every time we say that, we then go talk for an hour about something. But let's move on into our review of Free Birds.
I'm not going to dress it up. Turkeys are dumb. Really dumb.
You don't get it. They're fattening us up to eat us.
Hey, corn!
See you later, Reggie.
From the Academy Award-winning producer of Shrek.
We came to this farm for my favorite presidential tradition. Pardoning the Thanksgiving turkey.
And a director of Horton Hears a Who.
Don't worry, you're safe. I'm tired now. This is your new home.
Pizza!
Does it get any better than this?
Hello, soldier.
Whatever you do,
do not make a sound.
You've been recruited for a top secret mission.
What are you talking about?
We're going back in time to the first Thanksgiving to get turkeys off the menu.
Who are you talking to?
All right, Paul. So I guess we can have a spoiler section in this review. I don't know if I have like enough thoughts to talk about it in a spoiler-free and then a spoiler-full section. What do you think?
I think just for the sake of being polite to people, I would say we should have a spoiler/spoiler-free section.
Okay. All right. Let's
let's just give our general thoughts and then go into the spoiler section.
Yes, I think that's a great way to go. So I will read the plot synopsis from IMDb. Two turkeys from opposite sides of the tracks must put aside their differences and team up to travel back in time to change the course of history and get turkeys off the Thanksgiving menu for good. And Paul, when we were looking for films to review and you wanted to do like a children's thing, one film that a lot of people have recommended is Chicken Run, which is something that I've never seen, but I've been hesitant to review because Mel Gibson is one of the main characters and he's got a whole lot of baggage that comes along with him. But then I saw Free Birds and I thought, oh, this seems like it could sort of fill that hole that that Chicken Run had previously, I'm assuming, been filling. And on top of that, it has voices from Owen Wilson. Mm-hmm. Wilson, Woody Harrelson, Amy Poehler, George Takei, and Keith David. I mean, what a stacked cast, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So yes. Much talent in there. And obviously noted vegan Woody Harrelson in there as well. So that's really cool. So this is an animated film. It came out in 2013. It's called Free Birds. And basically it's about, as mentioned, it's about these time-traveling turkeys who go back in history, and the premise is recognizing that Thanksgiving is horrible for turkeys. So it feels like it could be primed to be a really great animal rights film for young children. Do you feel like it lived up to that possibility? And what are your general thoughts?
100% absolutely not, Andy. I would not consider this an animal rights film in the slightest, and I am surprised that in your search for animal rights films this showed up as one, because it is like, I don't know, I feel like it barely scratches the surface of any sort of realistic animal issue. Without spoiling anything, its resolution is just as exploitative of animals as the premise, some might argue. And yeah, I don't know. It's just like, it doesn't, I think it's, I'm going to say it, Andy, frankly, did not care for this movie. As someone who loves children's movies, just, I didn't think this was a very good movie. I thought the jokes fell flat. I thought there was only one or two moments where I chuckled out loud to myself, but again, in terms of the animal issues, definitely fell flat. I don't think anyone would be coming out of this being like, I don't want to eat turkeys anymore. Or if they did, I could maybe imagine a very small child coming out of it and being like, oh, I've bonded with these characters, I don't want it, mom, I don't want to eat turkeys anymore. And then mom would say, okay, we'll just have hamburgers instead, or we'll just have chicken instead. And the kid would be like, oh, okay. Because this movie is definitely like, as long as it's not turkeys, it's all kosher.
Yeah. Yeah. I look at this film as like an hour and a half long version of the Chick-fil-A's Eat More Chicken campaign, right? Where yeah. The cows are begging for their lives, but it's not like, don't eat any animal. It's just don't eat cows. Eat those chickens. So, yeah, I have to agree, Paul, that this film, to me, was not a fun ride. It had a few jokes that were okay. It was, you know, I enjoyed the voice acting of a number of people that I really enjoy in general. Some of the jokes I thought were just real, just one real bad or maybe slightly offensive. And it, I don't know, it didn't. I feel like it didn't play enough to the sort of the whimsy that a child would be looking for, the sense of adventure the child's looking for. And it didn't have enough of the extra layer of like wink, wink to the parents that might be watching it with their children or any like adult that be watching it to be like, oh, I get those references. Although I feel like there might have been a RoboCop reference. I feel like there might have been a RoboCop reference because there's that "Can you fly, Bobby?" I don't know if you caught that at all.
Oh, but I didn't. No, I didn't catch that.
It's like pretty early on, and I was like, "Really? Is that what we're doing here?" It was just, I would describe it as a giant nothing burger of a movie. Like it felt like it was going really far out of its way to not really say anything about anything for the most part, and it felt so like with a few tweaks it could have, but. And, you know, we'll get into this. We'll get into this about why we specifically don't think that it's an animal rights film. But it just was, yeah, it was not fun. Like, I was just kind of sitting there and the movie was just sort of washing over me. And I, like, wasn't connecting with anything. I wasn't finding anything funny. I was just like, am I just feeling really distracted right now? What's going on? Why can't I pay attention to this film? It was like, it was kind of a slog to get through, unfortunately, which is such a bummer to say with so many great cast members.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like, I don't know if lazy would be the word that I would use, but some of like the writing for it, it just didn't, it seemed like it was a lot of different things thrown together and not very well done. Like, I don't know, like what you were saying, how they didn't include enough. There wasn't a layer of like, oh, adults would like this movie too. But there was definitely some things that make you think that that's what they were trying to do. For instance, George Takei voices a sentient spaceship, essentially.
And named Steve.
Named Steve. And at the end of the movie gives an, oh my, like the you know, the stereotypical George Takei. And when that happened, I was like, come on. Like, this is, it's like, that's the level of, it's like that kind of level of, I don't know. I just saw the Lego movie too. And that movie, I think, is the epitome of references for adults, and loved Lego movie too. We should just stop talking about this and talk about loving Lego movie too. But I also agree with you, Andy, that there definitely seemed some potentially culturally insensitive aspects of the movie. Like, I don't know enough to comment on how the relatively few scenes with the Native Americans were portrayed, but then also the turkeys themselves, like, you could tell they were kind of going for maybe a Native American thing with the turkeys, but then some of the other turkeys, like one of the turkeys was like a stoner type turkey. I don't know. I don't really know what they were trying to do with the historical turkeys, but it seemed like they could not decide what they were going to do. So like all of the ideas that they originally threw out in the original writing session, they were like, oh yeah, we'll include some turkeys that are like this and we'll include some turkeys that are like this. So yeah, I don't know what they were going for that, but yeah, not great.
Yeah, I think before we move on to spoilers, I'll say this is just sort of my last little gripe that's kind of a general gripe before we really get into it, which is the turkeys don't really look like turkeys. And I feel like that is one of the things that would really prevent people from connecting the turkeys in this film to the turkeys that exist in real life and are slaughtered for people's Thanksgiving meals. Like, they looked like they were angry birds. And let's just move into our spoiler section right now.
Okay.
All right. Spoilers for Freebird starting right now.
Hey, come on. I haven't seen it yet. It doesn't have anything to do with the plot. Still, I like to go in fresh.
All right, Paul, speaking of Angry Birds.
Terrible joke.
The line that made me just roll my eyes in the back of my head and I died for 3 seconds and then came back to life was that moment when the birds were like launching the flaming pumpkins, and then there was the Native American, I'm assuming, chief that was like, those are some angry birds. And I was just like, oh my God. Like, it was like, that's the level of humor that we're working with in this film.
Yes. Yeah. It's like, I don't know. I don't want to like rag on the people who created this film too hard.
Rag, do it.
But it does not seem like the people like understood comedy.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I'm sorry, you don't know what a joke is. Or like what a reference is.
Yes. Okay, let's talk about animal stuff. Andy, I have seen this movie before, and I largely forgot the majority of it. So I was essentially going into it fresh. So early on in the movie, when the Owen Wilson kind of like wimpier but smart chicken meets the Woody Harrelson like tough sergeant, drill sergeant type turkey. Sorry, I said chicken. I meant turkey. At the very early on in the movie, the tough sergeant, drill sergeant Woody Harrelson turkey says something like, "Oh, I'm leading the TFF, the Turkey Freedom Front," and I was like, "Okay, all right, my interest is piqued. I would like to see where we're going with this." But I don't believe it ever makes reference to that ever again, or even makes reference to him knowing anyone else at all. So that leads me to believe that that was like a joke that wasn't really another one of these like non-joke type things where it's like that wasn't supposed to be a plot thing. That was supposed to be a joke. Like, oh, this guy is, of course, a part of this like militant turkey organization type thing that we're not going to follow up on.
Yeah, well, he's the lone wolf. Right? No. The other guy's. But the backstory of Woody Harrelson is that he lets down all of his turkey friends who are slaughtered and killed, including the eggs that he drops behind. And then he's like, I will never be with anyone else again or work with, you know anybody else again, because all I'm going to do is let them down and hurt them. And there's no chance of me hurting anybody if I don't make any friends. So that's, I'm assuming, why we don't get any reference to him working with any other organization. So the TFF. Solo turkey operation, I guess.
Mm. Also, in regards to that, the one scene towards the end when it gives you a glimpse into his backstory, even though at the very beginning of the movie, Owen Wilson's character, who is like the turkey that is enlightened, like understands what's going on at the farm that he lives in, and like, oh, these turkeys are all going, we are all being fattened up to be killed and eaten, and all the other turkeys dismiss him and think that they're going to this turkey paradise. So at the beginning, it does, again, I think I was more hopeful at the beginning of the movie because it does kind of frame it as this thing of like, Owen Wilson's character is terrified because he's worried about dying. And so you can kind of connect with that. But then at the end of the movie, when Woody Harrelson's turkey is giving his backstory, he says the line like, oh, I didn't grow up on a nice free range farm.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, oh, in the beginning of the movie, we were framing this farm, which looked like, you know, a small local farm, maybe free range, that they were framing as not a good thing at the beginning of the movie. Then there's this line towards the end of the movie where it creates this juxtaposition. Oh, it's like, oh, it's not this nice free range farm. And it's like, oh, okay. We forget about how terrified Owen Wilson was at the beginning of the movie. And now we're focusing on just like, no, this is the bad thing. Factory farming is the bad thing, you know?
Well, so I also made that observation, but then I was wondering, is that all meant for us to go, oh yeah, even the quote unquote nice free range farm is horrible? Like, is like, I'm giving the movie way too much credit, but I think that someone could make that connection, except it was just so far away from that initial moment and they don't like really kind of drill it home. So I feel like they weren't trying to do that. But I think that someone could read that and go, oh, even the nice free range farm, the turkeys still have to die and it's still terrifying for them.
I would agree with you that I don't think that that's what they were trying to do because it's like they could have easily, not easily, but they could have found a way to, because they never reference back to the turkeys that he knew at the beginning of the movie. It's almost as if like as after he leaves that farm in the first 3 minutes of the movie, they never go back to that farm and they never go back to the fact that it is implied that all of those turkeys are going to die. And it never references back to that. And I think that if they were trying to make that point, Andy, they would have found a way to be like, oh yeah, this factory, like I didn't grow up on this nice free range farm. This factory farm was terrible and awful. And then it could have referenced back to like, oh wait, but all of these people that I knew at the for my entire life are also dead from the beginning of the movie. And it doesn't do anything like that. So that leads me to believe that it's not trying to do that.
Yeah, I mean, Owen Wilson could have been like, wait, hold on. The free-range farm is not nice at all. They still, you know, they could have interjected something that would have driven that point home. But yeah, that's which I feel like leads to your point that you made earlier, which seems like they were in a writer's meeting and they were just like, let's just use everyone's idea. Let's just put everything in there and not refine it whatsoever. And they didn't really give much of a thought to how it was all going to come together as a cohesive whole. So it's almost even like hard to critique the film because it just feels like this mishmash of like bad jokes and like action movie and time travel cliches. I will say the one thing that I did enjoy was the moment when, what's Owen Wilson's turkey's name again?
Who knows?
Jake?
I think so.
Jake encounters all the other Jakes from various time travel things. I thought that was kind of a fun moment. And I'm digging. I'm just like trying hard here, Paul, for something positive to say. I appreciate that he's like, I'm breaking every rule of time travel right now. And then the Jakes just kept coming to be like, I'm from even further in the future. And I'm trying to tell you this. I don't know. As a huge fan of time travel films, I did enjoy that. But I thought the film was going to lead up to this thing that was about, you know, what like a lot of time travels are sort of about the futility of trying to change the past. And I was like, oh, is them attacking these the pilgrims, is that going to lead to them having hatred of turkeys? And that's why they eat the turkeys. You know, like, is he actually causing the connection of turkeys to Thanksgiving?
That sounds way too dark for a children's movie.
I thought it was going to be this like lighthearted children's film that ultimately is a tale about the futility of time travel.
Also, I questioned their, not that I'm not a history buff, Andy, but I questioned their inclusion of real life person Miles Standish as the villain of the movie. I don't know if he was a bad guy or like, I don't know if he was a terrible person in real life, but
I mean, he was definitely a colonial settler, so probably a horrible person.
But okay, so Andy, I'm going to go ahead and spoil the end of the movie. So the salute also, oh wait, one more thing. I did enjoy that one turkey that was half turkey, half chicken that just meowed instead of clucking.
I did not catch that.
Anyways.
Before we do that, can I just point out a few little problematic things before we talk about the conclusion?
Go for it.
I'll just say like the problematic jokes that were in there. There was that moment where the elderly turkey who can't see was like feeling Jake's face and was like, you feel like a woman. And he was like, oh, God, come on. Yeah. And then, of course, like the one like really greedy character is the fat character. And they're like making like food jokes. Oh, is that a big egg and all that stuff, which is also like super lazy writing as well. So just wanted to put those on the record.
Well, is that at the very end of the movie?
Well, it's also the beginning of the movie when like he's like the one guy that's like hoarding all the food.
I thought you were talking about, because there is literally at the very end of the movie for no reason at all. There is just the shot that's panning across all the humans eating the pizza. And the one woman is just like something, something, something fatty or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was
also
like, what?
That was harsh in a children's film.
And like unnecessary, because it was like a panning shot. There was like no reason for those characters to even be talking.
Yeah. It just felt like some writers were like, we need to punch up this scene. Let's just call some kid fat and like call it a day, because that's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. So Andy, I kind of just, was that the all of the comments that you wanted to make?
Yeah. I mean, the other little comment I have is about the ending, but not about what you're about to bring up, which is that there's a kiss at the end that is very much not consensual.
I don't remember that.
It was Jake and the Amy Poehler character there does a big old kiss, and you're like, I don't think there's much consent going on right there. Not teaching kids good consent culture. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the ultimate conclusion of this film.
Okay, so this I guess the most spoilage you're gonna get, and I already kind of said it, but the ultimate conclusion of this movie is there's about to be a big battle between the turkeys and the pilgrims, and at the very last second, Jake, Owen Wilson's character, time travels back in time with a bunch of pizza and gives everyone pizza, and everyone says like, you're right, we don't need to eat turkeys, we have pizza, and then pizza becomes the new tradition of Thanksgiving as you see as it goes forward in time. And it's like,
but does it? No, we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
So yeah. So it's like I think it's like such, I believe that there was, you know, no one that was writing this movie was thinking about this as an animal issue, because it's like, they present this in such a way that's like, yes, this is this thing that's not harmful to anybody. Even when we put anchovies on the pizza, it's like, this is this non-harmful solution to everything, where it's like, you don't even need to, it's like still birds that are being affected by this. And when this movie, at least when this movie was being made, you know, it's like, we have the like chick calling with the chickens. So it's like, yes, there is still all this death going on. Yeah. It's not turkeys, but it's like, I don't know. I feel like it's still with the cows, with chickens, it's still going to be very it's going to impact animals in a very negative way. But I guess pizza is this universal symbol of peace. Pizza.
Yeah, and it's not even like they present a vegetarian solution, because they put the sardines on the pizza as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
Mr. Anchovy.
Anchovy, yes. And so it was just such a weird thing. And then they undercut the entire ending with the little mid-credit stinger that they put in, where Woody Harrelson comes back. He's like, do you know about the turducken? And you're like, so wait, if what you did was successful, why are they still eating turkeys to the point where people have innovated the turducken?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So it's like, it doesn't matter at all. Like, nothing they did anything. Nothing they did changed anything at all. So what's the point of this film?
Yeah, it like, Andy, this film just seems like it was put together very fast and very sloppily, and it just doesn't make so much too much sense.
It feels like the studio is like, we need to cash in on this Thanksgiving craze that's going on right now. We need a Thanksgiving movie or something, you know, like, and so let's just throw something together. And it's, you know, it's interesting because It for all of the, for the audience to accept this film, it's sort of like we all have to collectively acknowledge how horrible Thanksgiving is for turkeys.
Yeah.
You know, which is, I don't know. I don't know what to make of that, but I'm curious what the box office of this was. Well, this film made $110 million.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, let's see, Angry Birds, the movie, made $352 million. Secret Good Life Lord. Of Pets made $875 million. So,
wow.
I mean, they made some money, but it's not that big money.
It's not Secret Life of Pets money.
Yeah. The domestic gross was almost $56 million, so... And their budget was $55 million. So with advertising, they probably didn't make that much money off this film.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Good. It just, I don't know what to make of the fact that this film requires a sort of collective reckoning of the fact that what we do to turkeys is horrible. But then I think that because the turkeys are so cartoonish and they just don't really look like turkeys at all, and they certainly don't look like the turkeys that are bred for Thanksgiving consumption now, I don't know. It feels like there's enough of a separation that it makes it so people don't really have to think about the connection all that much.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if, yes, actually I do think I was going to ask you, does it ever even show a cooked turkey? And I think it does. I think it does.
The very first shot. Yeah.
Yes. But other than that, it doesn't. So I feel like it's easy for someone to do to what you were saying, Andy, to disassociate real life from this movie and be like, oh, this is this world that we're living in where these turkeys are talking, and I don't have to take any like concrete message out of this because this is so unrealistic.
Yeah, I think so. I feel like those are probably all the thoughts I have.
Can I tell you the one line that made me laugh?
Okay, I bet it's different than the one line that I'm going to share that made me not laugh, but go ahead.
Okay, this is it's the line when they're looking for the time traveling thing and they're in that secret lab, and there's all the people in the the hazmat suits, and they have like the intercom thing that they have to press the button, and then they have these very like monotone voices. And one of the, and they're like, oh, there's turkeys running loose. And one of the guys says, how do we address it, sir? And the other one goes, with cranberry sauce. And then they all just collectively press their buttons and go, ha 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 ha.
I did enjoy that. I enjoyed how they put that together. The line that I'll choose to leave everybody with is the worst line when the guy eats the sardines. Tastes like dirty socks. Still better than my wife's cooking, am I right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Like, you're like,
who is that joke for?
Yeah, is it kind of like, is it supposed to be, like, making fun of the whole, like, take my wife, please, like, line of humor? Or, it to me, it felt like a lawyer joke, you know? It was like, ugh, a lawyer, you know, it's just like, oh, really? That's what we're doing right now? Your wife's a bad cook jokes? Hilarious.
Yeah. Did you notice that when the pizza delivery person brought the pizzas to the pilgrims, that some of the pizza boxes were Chuck E. Cheese boxes?
Oh, you mean Charles Entertainment Cheese?
Yes, that is who I mean. And I was like, Chuck E. Cheese pay for this?
It's a real small product placement because they couldn't afford to make it every box.
Yeah. It was like every other box.
Yeah. Oh,
that was right, that's all I got to say about this
interesting
movie.
Interesting product placement for sure. All right. Well, if you made it this far, we do not recommend seeing this film, right? I don't.
Yeah, no. It's honestly, there are so many better children's movies. Go see the Lego Movie. Go see the Lego Movie 2. Great movies. Love those movies.
Especially if you're a fan of Bruce Willis.
Yes. So, yeah, I would definitely not recommend this movie. We basically told you everything that's important to know about this movie, so we saved you from... It took me 2 tries to watch this movie, Andy, and that's... This movie was not tremendously long, so that, I feel like that's saying a lot.
Yeah, a nice solid hour and a half. It's an hour too long.
Should have been a short film, animated short.
Yeah, it could have been like a fun SNL skit.
Yeah.
So let us know out there, all you wonderful beardos, what you think of this film. Also, I'd be specifically interested to know, what are your favorite children's films with some sort of animal rights theme, maybe an environmentalist theme a la Fern Gully or something like that? Send us those suggestions, because I would be really curious to critique one that is significantly better than Free Birds. Free Birds, yes. By the way, has a solid 18% on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
That checks out.
Yeah. The 44% audience enjoyment. So
interesting. Yeah. This is by far, I've taken the least amount of notes on any movie when I was watching this movie. I was just like, there's no substance here.
I usually have 1 to 2 full pages of notes, and this I had like 5 notes.
Mm-hmm. That is exactly
like,
how many I had.
There's nothing for me to like grab onto and discuss in this film. And it feels like such a missed opportunity because it could have been an amazing thing. Oh, it's about turkeys going back in time to prevent their mass slaughter. Like, they could have been ripe for animal rights messaging, but alas, it did not happen.
It did not. So yeah, let us know what you think. Send in your thoughts, thebeardvegans@gmail.com, or comment below this if you're on the Patreon. And yeah, let us know what you think. Andy, I'm not going to ask you what you have going coming up, because who knows when people are listening to this episode?
Maybe never.
Well, no, hopefully not that, but
Well, Paul, it's been a delight discussing this with you, and while I never want to see Free Birds ever again, I always want to hear you saying the following 7 words.
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off.
I'm recording. Are you?
I'm recording, yes. Just waiting to hit that record button to take a drink.
Got to get that sweet surround sound on me drinking this jug of water. Which is in L.A. proper, I believe. And I don't know if that doesn't even... I don't know if there's L.A. proper. Is there a not L.A. proper?
I am not the one to ask.
Okay. Let's wait for this truck to pass.
R.I.P. truck.
Great joke. Sorry, I had my microphone muted. And now there's a plane. It's a real high traffic area I chose to park.
Yep, according to... Okay, I'm going to edit all that out.